welcome to the show. This is Walnut Grovecast. My name is Mark. I have a world traveler, the a podcast traveler, the infamous Chris Cooling. How are you, Chris?
I am still Chris Cooling. Yes. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for taking the time out to come on to the show tonight.
I'm so famous that I'm infamous.
Nice. You know what? I'm going to play just this first clip just to get us into the mood for this particular episode. I don't want to say what it is yet. And this is one of your choices. And yes, it's a beloved episode. Beloved episode. And let's just take a little bit of a listen linky-do. And Laura blows it. Thanks, Laura.
What episode?
Would you like to introduce the episode?
Yes, it's the episode that gives us an origin story for the bell, for the church and school building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for once.
Yeah. The voice of Tinker Jones. I didn't write it down. Episode 11 of season 1, correct?
Yes. This is one of the last religious kind of heavy-handed ones.
Okay.
I don't know that for a fact, but I can't really remember too many that have such a, a little bit of a heavy-handedness having to do with watch your language around women type of thing.
I think we get that again.
Do we? I mean,
this is only season one. No, they get churchy again on the show. But this aired in December of 1974,
and crazy.
So it is an early episode.
It's the great Chuck McCann, who made everyone knows who Chuck McCann is, but they have no idea who he is. He's been on everything, right? I mean, this guy made a career just using his voice, and we just lost him a few months ago.
Right. He died in April. He was 83. He got his start as a child actor on radio. So it's not surprising that he has this ability that he had developed over essentially his entire life. And he'd had so many different things that he has done. I mean, he was around for the beginning of television.
Absolutely.
That's just amazing to me when you look at somebody that has been around for so long that they were basically around for the development of these things that we all take for granted now.
And in no small way either. I mean, he was a comedian. I believe he performed as a comedian. I'm not 100% sure about this, on the Steve Allen show in 1951. I think he was a comedian on the show.
And he was into puppetry. So right around that time, he was on numerous television shows. Many of those were on local live television. There were shows like Rudy Kazooty and Uncle Paul's Lunchtime and so forth. And those were performed live on TV, and they didn't have, or it was very rudimentary. They didn't really do a lot of those shows to videotape. They were just performed, and what you got was that's what the show was. And those shows were not recorded in any way. So all of these hours of television will never be seen because there's no recordings of them.
Yeah, it's a real shame. You know, you think back to this time when, live television was such a thing, and to have no record of it, really, just memories, or, if somebody had recorded, maybe they would have, I don't know, I wonder if they had any audio recordings of some of these things, but it's very unlikely that they would record an entire show like that.
Yeah, not something that was like a daily children's show. Right. I mean, whatever we have from that era is an exception.
Mm-hmm.
Something that was kinescoped, and that's why you can go back and see old Honeymooners and things, because they did record them by filming basically a TV screen. And so we do have some film from that era, but it's very little compared to the multitude of shows that there were. You know, the whole DuMont network is gone. We have almost nothing from that. So,
but you know, like if you go, you can't really compare an I Love Lucy episode or a Honeymooners episode, which generated a lot of money, versus a children's show, which really it probably had some okay sponsors, but it really just wasn't bringing the same audience. So to record it, to store it, to store properly,
no,
and for it even to exist is wild.
Yeah, it was an ephemeral thing. It was of the time, and that was it.
Yeah, but we are fortunate to have little snippets here and there. So
yeah,
and you look at some of the Honeymooners, and in particular, I Love Lucy episodes. Actually, I Love Lucy was a little bit later. Was it 54? I'm not 100% sure about that. I mean, those are beautiful prints. You know, those are. They had a really kind of down at that point. I think they had some level of focus in archiving it.
Well, at that point, you got those were actually filmed before an audience, so the film exists. But so many of these original shows, like The Honeymooners, was performed and was broadcast live to TV.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's only because they kinescoped that the actual recording. We don't have some of those old Honeymooners either.
Yeah.
A lot of those things went out into the airwaves, and then that was it. But Tinker Jones was in the 70s. He was doing guest star appearances on TV. I mean, he was on Police Woman, Starsky and Hutch. So you saw him here and there on television. And, of course, later became a very regular voice on Saturday morning.
Sure.
On Scooby-Doo and the new Shmoo and things like that. And he was on the Far Out Space Nuts.
You know, did you ever see his early movie, The Projectionist?
No, I've not seen that.
I do recommend it. It's the first time I found Rodney Dangerfield. This is a movie from 1971, and he plays a projectionist, and it's really, really kind of funny. Rodney Dangerfield plays a really interesting character. I just have to really recommend it. I posted a small clip of Rodney Dangerfield basically berating his staff on VHS Rewind. I forgot about this movie completely. I don't remember where I first saw it. It's possible it was kind of like a midnight movie or something.
Huh.
Not a great movie. But okay, essentially, Chuck McKen fantasizes about being a superhero. And he's surrounded by all of these 8x10 glossies of famous people. So he's doing voices constantly. I remember, as a kid, I really liked it.
I'm going to have to seek that out. Yeah.
It's out there. back in 1874, Tinker is a guy who's basically trying to run the Olsons out of business, because what he's doing is going to each farm and undercutting the Olsons, right?
His product is much nicer, though.
Yeah, he has a better product, and it's cheaper. So he's basically running them out of business. He's really the enemy. I don't think too many people see Tinker as the enemy, like I do.
The original Amazon Prime.
Exactly. Think about that. So here we are. We have Tinker selling a beautiful copper pot to Mrs. Ingalls for 35 cents.
Yep.
So, here's the transaction.
Very special. Thank you. How much do I owe you?
That is a little chalk and board.
It's less than the mercantile. And so much nicer.
Why don't you just stab Mrs. Olsen right in the back and twist it. That's what I say.
He's probably not marking it up enough.
No, he's not. He's one of these guys where he loves doing what he does, metalwork, and he's basically just selling it to exist.
Right.
Does Tinker ever return to Little House? I don't think so, right?
No, this was a one-shot appearance. There's another the Walnut Grove residents that, you know, we see once, and there's no voiceover at the end like you expect. Sometimes when we got later with Laura would explain, so-and-so lived in Walnut Grove for another couple years, and then they died.
We do have a voiceover in the middle, though, which is weird.
But not like at the end. Not no. Like, we don't get like a closure thing at the end.
When so we all went to church, you know, like that type of thing. Sorry, so
I don't think they were thinking he would come back at some point or something, but it's just one of those one-off appearances.
He would have been a halfway decent reoccurring character, I think, you know? So he gives a really beautiful metal horse to both Mary and Laura for free. Like, come on. And Carrie gives him the stink eye, and basically it's like,
Same ones that we saw at the for sale at the Mercantile later.
That's right. Yeah. They think you wouldn't notice, but, you know, come on. All right. And so he has this little thing with Carrie and gives her something. I'm not really sure what he gave her. Did you catch that?
It looked like a little knife.
Yeah, like an arrowhead or something.
It's a fish. It's a little stylized.
Oh, that's okay.
Bronze or copper fish.
Okay. And here we have one of Carrie's one of three lines in the entire episode. Mine. I love Carrie. So he's a beloved guy. Everybody seems to like him. Apparently he's also very hard of hearing. He's also a mute. You know, everybody's very sympathetic to Tinker. Nobody is mean to him. Did you catch that at all? Like, nobody really kind of came down on him. You would expect a little bit of hostility coming from Nelly. I don't recall there being any.
No, they didn't have any aspect of that. All the children were favorable to him.
So the next scene is it's not the next scene, I'm sorry. The next scene I've clipped is in the church. It's a little comedic. You'll hear a man snoring in the background as Reverend Alden preaches.
Almighty God, who has blessed the land that it should be fruitful and bring forth whatsoever is needful for the life of man, and has commanded us that we work with quietness and eat our own bread, even though we have sinned.
He gives him a gentle reminder, waking him up. It was pretty funny, I thought.
Yeah, he puts his hand on his shoulder.
Also, we have an entire church, for the most part, of people who I've never seen before. a lot of people here, I have no idea who they are. We have some regulars, like Miss Beadle, the Olsons.
Mr. Hanson.
Has Kennedy been in this more than once? I kind of remember him in a couple episodes.
So this is the first appearance of Mr. Kennedy, at least as a speaking role. I didn't wade through full episodes to see if they had shown him or something, but this is the first episode where Mr. Kennedy appears. He's played by Wayne Heffley, and he would appear four times in the first season. Now we see his kids regularly, Christy and Sandy. And they were quite regularly interacting with Laura and Mary. And I'm not sure how often they may have shown the parents, like at church, and just not had them in speaking roles.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a regular family of season one, and then they completely disappear at the next season.
Yeah, and there's a lot of kids in this particular episode, one of which ended up becoming a superstar. Later on, it was interesting. Both you and I didn't know about this when we were younger, or even throughout the 80s, maybe. At least I didn't. It wasn't until I was a full-blown adult that I realized that Sean Penn, whose father directed this particular episode, was in quite a few scenes of this episode.
He was. You definitely can pick him out in the background there.
You can't unsee him after a bit.
Right.
He really stands out. So Reverend Alden basically is asking to speak to the entire church, and 3 minutes is a very long time. So I'm gonna sum it up a little bit. And he's basically saying that he feels as though the one thing missing in the church, in the congregation, is a bell. And everybody really loves this idea. So I'm going to pick up a little bit right in the middle of my clip.
It was the sound of a church bell calling the faithful to worship every Sunday morning. Now, isn't that what we need? A bell for our church here in Walnut Grove?
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, I think it's a good idea.
So do I.
Well, I propose a special collection. I think we should all search our hearts and our pocketbooks. Give what we can. We can choose the bell after we see what we can afford.
Reverend, may I speak?
Well, certainly, Mrs. Olson.
Thank you. I think that we should have a very large bell, like they have in the churches in St. Paul.
Mrs. Olson, that's a wonderful dream, but Walnut Grove doesn't have... Well, nor can we compete with a city the size of St. Paul.
Yeah, a bell that size, we couldn't afford.
Well, my husband and I would like to contribute the bell.
Well, that's very generous.
We will contribute the bell and the plaque.
What? And it was all downhill from here.
And here we go.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love the way everyone opens up about this. I think everybody had every right to feel stepped on a little. But here's
Mrs.
the
Olson, her plaques.
She loves plaques.
It's a recurring thing on this show.
Yeah, it is.
A plaque?
Dedicating it in our names. After all, we are paying for it.
Reverend, may I speak?
Well, certainly, Mr. Kennedy.
Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but I feel this is God's house. Now, we built it with our own hands. I don't think the Lord's going to like it much if we put somebody else's name on it.
Well, that's the most ungrateful thing that I've
Now, hold it a minute.
Mrs. Olson has been kind enough to make the offer, and I think we ought to accept it. Now, what could you give, Kennedy? 50 cents? A dollar?
As much as I could. It's more than you'd give. You sit there snoring all the way through the service. You never hear the word of the Lord. At least I come to church every Sunday.
Please. Let's not forget we're in a church.
So, this is really is the beginning of the end. A lot of bad things start quickly dissolving in... Walnut Grove. So
yes, that sets up the argument. That's the conflict in this episode is over the church bell. Who's going to pay for it?
Immediately, people are yelling at each other, such as here.
She's gonna change everything.
If she gives us a bell, Kennedy, what difference does a little plaque make? We don't even have to look at it.
Oh, the next thing you know, she's gonna change the name of this town to Olsonville.
You are a stubborn man.
Oh, that may be true, but Olson's not gonna run my religion.
That won't happen here.
Well, it just might.
Well, maybe not as big as the bells in St. Paul, but at least a lot bigger than the ones in Mankato or Sleepy Eye.
That will certainly show them.
It's so funny. That'll show them. Like, what are you talking about?
Very, very prescient there about the Olsonville.
Yeah, it's definitely forward thinking right there.
She just might.
She might.
She might.
So Reverend Alden realizes that he's really opened Pandora's box here. So for whatever reason, he goes directly to Charles and says that that he should have gone to Charles in the first place. And I'm very unsure why. I'm not really, I mean, is it because Charles is very level-headed? But I would think Reverend Alden is also very level-headed.
I now have the feeling I should have come to you first, Charles. But I didn't. I went to the Olsons and the Nelsons. I met Mr. Tyler, Mr. Dorfler, Mr. Kennedy at the blacksmith shop. Yeah, I thought I could prevail on Mrs. Olson to let others contribute towards the bell, but she refused. We accept the bell as offered, or the Olson family will attend church in Springfield.
Springfield, that's a 50-mile round trip.
Now, let me just ask you, how long would it take to do a 25-mile ride? I mean, we're talking 2 days? They're not going to travel 25, maybe not 2 days, but...
You're talking about your entire day being eaten up, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to do that at night.
If it was a good road, I would think that... What does one of those wagons go at?
I don't know.
15 miles an hour?
Yeah, probably at best.
So... Yeah, so you're looking at like an hour and a half each way, something like that, 75 minutes.
Yeah, which probably a lot more.
Not foreseeing road conditions and
hills
and all that kind of thing. So
it
sounds like a bunch of talk to me, but the stakes have been raised here.
So here's the rest of that clip.
I mentioned that, but she was adamant. But so were Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Tyler. Now, they want no part of Mrs. Olson's bell and plaque. They said that...
Oh, we can imagine what they said.
Well, it's just as well, because some of the words used wouldn't bear repeating with a lady present. Now, one thing I did find out, the angers are spreading. People are choosing sides. If I accept the Olsen's offer, we lose half the congregation. And if I don't, we lose the other half.
Reverend, these storms come up and then they blow over.
You have a lot of friends here.
Thank you. I've taken up enough of your time.
Probably eat half a pie. Get out of here, Reverend. He's always showing up eating. So Charles basically goes to Kennedy and he's saying, look, come to this meeting, just talk, just listen. But he agrees to. I don't think that Kennedy is completely out of his mind or anything. He's a hard-headed guy, but I can kind of understand where he's coming from. I think a lot of people are starting to realize, though, that that they do need to take a side in this small township. So here we go.
Okay.
I'm sorry, did you want to add something?
The argument that's being made by several is that to the beginning, how they built the church at the beginning was that everyone contributed their labor and materials and everything, and now for... someone to donate something, which all of them have donated either their time, labor, or materials, to build the church in the first place, somebody else to come along and then have their name on a plaque. They don't agree that that's right.
Yeah. And so I agree with that as well.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to such a small group of people who, physically built the place.
Can we have some quiet, please? Thank you. I thought we should have this meeting to discuss the Reverend Alden's suggestion. I think we can discuss it as friends, neighbors, and members of the congregation. I suggest we think in terms of a compromise. There's no one of us that can have his or her way on everything. I personally think we need a bell. We've had an offer of such a bell from the Olsons.
And a plaque. Don't forget the plaque.
The bell and the plaque. Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. I think we should hear from those who are willing to accept that offer and those who are opposed.
I think we ought to accept the gift in the manner in which it was intended.
Well, now, that's just what I don't like. Don't you remember how hard we worked? We built this church in honor of the Lord. We donated the boards and the joists and the beams and the rafters to him. We didn't put our names on none of it.
Really? Oh, now, really, that is not...
No, wait, son, wait, please. This is the house of God. Now, let's conduct our discussion quietly.
We take that bell. It's going to be the Olson house, bell, pew, and pulpit. And I'll tell you something else, Ingalls. She'll be doing the sermon. That's sacrilegious.
Now, wait. I suggest that we forget about the Olson's bell and that we start over and we take a collection so all of us can...
Oh, well, this is... You are a measly man. Nels, I will not stay here and be insulted. Come along.
No, wait, please.
Oh, be quiet.
No,
I'm not going to be insulted any longer.
No insult intended. All I wanted was so we could all contribute to the bell.
Good riddance.
There's another minute left to the clip. I just think it's worth playing. Sorry.
Mr. Kennedy, if you would keep a civil tongue in your head, we might just get something accomplished here.
All right, I think we should take the vote. All those in favor of a special contribution.
Mr. Ingalls, we're a poor community. If we accept the gift of the bell, that way it won't cost us anything.
If we take the bell, and then you will want the new church, that also should be for free?
Hanson, that's not true.
Well, not exactly for nothing, Hanson. You're going to be standing right there ready to sell the lumber.
Mr. Kennedy.
Listen, I contribute as much as any man in this town, and I want...
I thought we came here to discuss the bell.
Oh, why don't we forget that blame bell? We done all right without it up to now. Show of hands.
For what?
That's it, Ingalls. The meeting's a jerk.
What did we vote? We did vote for. No, wait, come back.
I love Miss Beadle when she goes, Mr. Kennedy. I think it might be one of her few lines. I mean, well, actually, she had a little bit of stuff here and there. Tinker's in the back of the room, basically, just getting kind of visually upset about this.
Right.
And it's kind of, you know, you see kind of something going on with him. So what do we have now? Now we get to, how is this affecting the children?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that, I don't know if you've ever had this when you were a kid, but when one parent has an argument with another parent, it really does trickle down to the children.
Yes.
And it can be really, really stressful. So here's a good example of that in 1874.
Let's play Uncle John.
We can't.
Why not?
Our fathers won't let us because of what your father said about the bell.
Aren't we friends anymore?
We can't play with them either.
Kid is a slingshot, by the way. I just noticed that. It's a pretty hefty one, too.
Yeah, so it's even causing divisions with the children.
Which is a real shame because, you know, the kids are just there to have fun and learn and get their church on. In the next scene, though, I did want to ask you, what are they fishing for, in your opinion? He has this weird ice cream cone-looking contraption. I thought they were
basket.
Maybe using this to catch frogs or something.
No, fish swim into it, but they don't swim out.
Nice. And they're little. They're little tiny fish.
I think they're supposed to be catfish.
Really?
That's what it looks like he's putting in the bag to me.
Hmm.
But there's no close-ups.
Yeah, so he's probably really just putting like little bags of sand in there. It's no fish.
Oh, so that's either a fish or a prop that looks like a fish.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that clear, but and just by the generic shape, that's what my assumption is. And it's kind of in the pond area where it's, you know, it's obvious this little artificial area that they dug out for the the outside set. But that's exactly where you would find catfish.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, in a pond, like under a log, that kind of thing. Because they're very much a bottom feeding type of fish. Mm. And you'll find them under rocks. And did you ever watch that show where they go catfishing and the guys try to pull one out from under the rocks and stuff with their bare hands?
No, no.
Noodling?
No, never saw.
Fish noodling?
But, you know, I definitely used to watch a lot of these kind of shows. And, yeah, I really didn't know that about catfish. I really didn't think about catfish, although I do eat catfish. Blackened catfish is delicious. Mm. So, Reverend Alden, the following Sunday, church has a lot less people.
Yeah, it looks like about a third yeah. of the church is gone, or even more than that, maybe.
And Reverend Alden is starting to see the writing on the wall.
You mustn't blame yourself.
I unwittingly started the conflict, which is tearing the congregation apart, and my efforts for peace just seem to make things worse. Now, I'm afraid there won't be an end to the fighting unless I do leave.
Reverend, no.
But I think it's best.
I think it's best if we have our Sunday services at home from now on.
Now, 2 weeks from today, I'm going to be coming through Walnut Grove on my way to Mankato. With your permission, I'll stop in and share your service. We could say goodbye then.
You're always welcome, Reverend. Good day, Reverend.
I read that there was a line that they took out last minute in this scene where Charles was supposed to say, just don't bring any of this bell nonsense with you. No, I'm just kidding. That'd be awesome, though.
A time frame, 2 weeks.
That's the kind of joke I'll make, and I'll get like an email from somebody. It's not funny. I don't think that's very funny, Mark. So Caroline goes to the Kennedy farm.
Yeah, she they're on their way home from church.
Yeah, she's like, I'm going to stop by and I'm going to talk to Mrs. Kennedy. And I'm going to sit around a doily and we're going to drink tea. And Mr. Kennedy's going to come home and be mean to me.
Yep.
Because Caroline's not used to being spoken to in this in a manner that Mr. Kennedy speaks to his wife. I'm going to play a bit of that just to kind of... And, you know, their place kind of has a similar look to the Ingalls house. I overshot it. That's the dramatic music.
Closed. And you can tell your husband it's going to stay that way until talk of this damn bell comes to an end. We find ourselves a new minister.
I'll thank you to watch your language.
My house, say what I like.
You would. You don't care that your neighbors aren't speaking to each other, that your children and mine are aching over this terrible feud.
I said before, Miss Ingalls, the matter is closed.
I like that actor a lot, though, Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah, he was fine.
Yeah, he is a certain look about him that I really think is really great. It's a good role for him. I'm going to look him up. I want to see him in other stuff. So what do we have? We have the kids now even more devolving into the types of behavior that the parents are, you know, bringing to the table. I'm going to bring it right in the middle of them yelling at each other just because it kind of builds up, but it takes a little while to get there. So here we go.
Okay. Well, we should say they're all,
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, well, they all go to Tinker Jones. They'd all decide to visit Tinker
right.
Jones. Yeah. This has got to be Sunday afternoon after church and everybody's changed and it's not a school day. So everybody ends up at Tinker's.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a safe space in a lot of ways. Like you can maybe just meet up there. Nobody's going to bother you. And hang out with good old Tinker.
It is too. If it weren't for him, there wouldn't be no more talk about the bell.
Willie's right. My pa says there ain't gonna be no bell anyway.
Well, my ma says that your pa is stubborn and selfish.
You take that back, Laura.
I won't.
You ought to hear what my pa says about your pa.
You say one word about my pa and I'll slap your face.
You do and you'll be sorry.
That was Tinker. So, yeah, it's a very visual thing. He's basically showing with the toys that they're acting ridiculous. Mary's going to decipher what he's saying.
I think we're acting just like our parents.
The Tinker's basically saying, you know, center square gets the circle. So what do we do at this point? So if the kids want to make any type of, you know, real change, they're going to work with Tinker. And Tinker comes up with a really great idea. I think a really great idea. I remember as a kid loving this whole concept. It's one of those kind of things where, how do we fix this? You know, there's only one way to fix it. We need a bell. So Tinker pulls out this metal sheet and unveils a plan.
Well, what's he trying to tell us?
He's going to make a bell.
Tinker?
Wait till I tell my mother.
No. He wants it to be our secret.
Well, you tell your mother, you won't have anybody to play with. Or anybody to be mean to.
She's right.
All right, I'll help.
That was actually pretty easy to convince Nellie.
That's yeah. Cool.
For once.
And then there's old Sean Penn right behind Willie and Nellie.
Kind of like looking, it's just so funny. He's so out of place, but he kind of fits in at the same time. It's really funny.
Yeah. And also in this scene, I didn't realize this till I looked it up. We have another used to be famous person.
Really?
13-year-old Jimmy McNichol was in this episode.
Oh, Chrissy McNichol's brother.
Yes, and he was, of course, he had a little bit of his own fame in the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He was sort of a teen actor, made the rounds in like the teenage magazines and things, and started having a little bit of his own stardom. He was in some TV movies in the 80s and things.
Yeah, I used to have a weird crush. I still don't fully understand it. There. And I think she, I'm sorry, what?
You said I used to have a, and then you dropped off.
Oh, sorry. I used to have a crush on Chrissy McNichol back in the 70s. Back in those days.
Yeah, and there was a little tidbit of information I found online. This was actually the only time or the last time he actually was in three episodes. This was the third episode Jimmy McNichol had appeared in.
Wow, I had no idea.
Kids, yeah. But this was the last episode he would have appeared in, and there is a specific reason why. Melissa Sue Anderson says that he was being an extremely difficult child and an unruly child in this episode. And he was old enough to know better. He was 13 years old. But it said that during a break in filming, he probably had a crush on Melissa Sue, and so he's, you know, how boys will throw wads of paper and things like that.
Yeah.
Evidently, he threw a pencil at her.
Oh my god!
It hit her in the face, and the point hit her in her face below her eye. It's a big scene about it, because I mean you're threatening production at this point with one of the before the credits names, you know. So she doesn't elaborate very much on it, but it said that he got in a lot of trouble, and that was it. He was never on the show again.
Yeah, easily replaceable. So what Tinker does is he starts collecting toys, the metal toys that he makes.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts basically telling them all to begin collecting metal, scrap metal.
Buckets and pails and Even some other stuff. He gets them to add in their toys and things.
All the stuff that he sold to their parents, basically. Except for the copper stuff. No, he needed copper for the bell. To make it properly. So
yep. Need tin and bronze make bell metal, right?
Well, isn't tin and copper bronze? When you melt it, when you blend it? I'm not 100% sure.
Hey.
That's a footnote that I have to figure out now. Find out what bronze is.
Yeah, but he had this big fire. I mean, I guess it's a foundry where he can melt metal, and he has a big bellows, and they go to collecting all these items and to melt down them all into the metal they're going to make the bell out of.
But I mean, to make something like this, you're looking at 120 pounds, maybe. You need a lot of metal.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of guesstimating by the weight it kind of looked sort like.
Sort of depends on how big and how thick it ended up, and what it's not. Very, very clear. They glossed over a lot of what's involved in making a bell.
Oh yeah, I mean, the absolutely. I don't even believe he could have gotten it hot enough with the equipment that he was using.
Oh, okay. I didn't know about that, but I was going to say, unless he was experienced and had made bells before, I would think it's stretching belief.
Yeah, you're right.
a deaf or nearly deaf man, for one, would be able to correctly manufacture a bell, which actually involves tuning it after it comes out of the cast, because it just doesn't come out perfect usually.
Yeah, and also making the mold.
Mold, yeah. That they didn't even show that. So that was that would have been one of the most involved processes, is making the mold.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hilarious. Yeah,
I don't know how much of this you're going to play. I have it playing here in the background, and they're throwing in bring me the golden calf. No,
<he's> gonna I was going to play the Tinker. No,
Tinker. No, don't do it.
I can't hear you, Laura.
You need my horse and mine? You need all our toys. He needs tin, too. We'll get more tin.
A whole wagon load.
Even if we have to turn Walnut Grove upside down and shake it, we'll get a lot. Tomorrow morning, we'll have it here.
I just don't believe that he can get as hot in this kind of earth oven. Oh, I mean, you can get hot in one of those, definitely. But I don't know. To melt and blend this metal together and make a spout.
That's a lot, yeah.
I remember as a kid loving this. I thought it was so cool. So what do we have? We have the kids basically going around. It's a lot of music.
Yeah, raiding the town for old buckets.
But we end up in the Olsen's mercantile in the back room where they keep all the good stuff.
Indeed.
And actually, some of these are actually pretty cool looking. But here we go.
Ma said we could have it. She didn't say anything about bringing them back.
Pa didn't say anything.
And the kid who said that basically stole the bell off of his cow.
Yeah, needs more cowbell.
Exactly.
I completely see what you mean. Now that I'm seeing this open pit
The kid's
metal,
hand is up there.
There's no way. Yeah. Because to have molten metal, which is I think nearly the temperature of lava, to melt the tin bronze alloy to actually pour it, you have to have basically an enclosed metal thing. I don't know what it's called, but there's a giant metal thing that this molten metal is in.
Like a cauldron of some sort. Yeah, you know?
Exactly. With a lid on it and only an opening to put more in. So, yeah, that opening thing where all that heat is just escaping, there's no way. But this is, you know, a TV episode.
I mean, I'm sure somebody tried it. I'm sure you can melt it down, but there's no way you can actually successfully make a bell this way.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what they some kind of colored mud or something we're seeing flow down this chute.
Yeah, I kind of probably paint, right? It's probably just gold paint. So what do we have here? Basically, yeah, it's a lot of visual stuff. We hear the bubbling of the metal. This goes on for about 10 minutes. It's fascinating. So kids just, yeah, stand around it as the metal, the molten metal splurts out and
yes.
lands on your hand.
Stand back at least 2 feet, children.
Yeah, seriously, there's no splatter guards and nothing. It was 1874. But
we have Caitlin baking bread and Pa's wondering what happened to my old buckets of coal oil.
Yeah. There is a cool sound, though, that the bell makes when they release it from the mold. I thought this was a lot of fun. Sean Penn is also one of the kids who is helping with the crane type of thing that they would have used on Gilligan's Island to make a bell. If you notice, like, everything that Tinker does is really archaic. Everything is like ropes, you know, tied around sticks. So, yeah, they're basically hoisting. They're going to hoist the mold off of the molten bell, which I don't know how that would work either. Because there would need to be a bottom and all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, they, like I said, they glaze over the whole deal. Yeah. It pops out all nice and shiny.
Oh, it's perfect. You're like, oh, man, that looks pretty nice. Yeah.
Polished it and everything.
But it does make a cool sound, so here we go. You know, they have... I'm sorry, they have 3 big kids pushing down for leverage, and they have Tinker pulling up with, like, real force. This thing is giving an indication of being 400 pounds, 500 pounds. And there's no way. No way. Yeah, it comes out as a beautiful, perfect bell. Tinker,
yeah,
being as awesome as he is, he goes in the middle of the night, and I think first thing in the morning.
Yeah, Saturday night, he hoists it secretly up on the building.
What does this knucklehead start doing?
What do you make of that?
Don't know.
Sounds like a perfectly tuned bell.
So get the girls ready. We're going to town.
That bell would probably get hit twice before cracking. Right now.
They didn't even show him making the clapper or putting that on or anything.
Or how did he get it up there without, like, making... Well, I guess he could have, like, wrapped it in the cloth and then attached it to something and pulled it off, but... Yeah, I mean, and we're looking at the bottom of the bell. We do get a view of it briefly. And it, you know, I guess it's pretty thin-walled. It would be really impossible to make. I think we've come to the conclusion that there is no way that they could have made this.
No, too thin and it cracks. So, yeah. And we know what happens with the Liberty Bell. Got the crack in. But, so, you know, that's why it's an exacting thing to make one of these, even now, but... Even then, with the rough in the rough manner that it's depicted, somebody that did this would have had to have known what they were doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Townsies basically hear it, and they come, and here they are.
stop ringing that bell? Now, who's responsible for this?
Who paid for it?
I think it's glorious.
Did someone take up a collection behind my back?
I think the Reverend owes us an explanation.
I assure you, Mr. Kennedy, I'm just as surprised as you are.
Pa, it wasn't the Reverend.
It was Tinker Jones' idea.
Tinker made the bell.
He did it so we would all stop fighting and become friends.
And have church here. Like we used to.
Clip, I think I wrote it wrong. It was supposed to say Reverend.
Yeah, there's a long stretch of music and everybody looking at each other, and
I think I wrote down the wrong number, but here we go.
Reverend, don't you think it's time to lead us into Sunday service?
Wonderful. Do we ever learn where Reverend Alden goes during the week?
The secret life of Reverend Alden.
Seriously.
Next time. Oh, no. no, but we know he makes the rounds of various towns, and if he comes twice a month?
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, twice a month. So there's some town out there.
Yeah.
That loves him just as much as we do.
At some point, they kind of drop that aspect, and he's just there.
He's just always there.
Yeah.
It's like Doc Baker in a lot of ways. Like, where does Doc Baker live?
Oh, yeah. And they didn't even show him.
Yeah, he wasn't even here.
A lot of early episodes where they didn't show Doc Baker, but maybe he too was, you know, supposed to be out.
Oh, yeah. He's out, like, delivering a horse or something.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, it was heartwarming. I'd call one of those simple, back to basics, heartwarming episodes.
It's a sweet episode. There's no doubt about it. This is the kind of episode that you could suggest to people, and you know that they'll like it. There's no reason not to like this episode.
Uncomplicated. There's not a backstory, really. Anything, and so anybody can enjoy it. I did look up and saw a couple of interesting points about the history of bells being on churches. Mm. Metal bells were made in ancient China and were later used everywhere. But it was originally in the realm of Christianity, the Italian monks refined the craft of bell fanning around 1600 years ago. Hmm. And it was a particular individual named Paulinus of Nola who was credited with introducing the use of bells in church services. And what I found interesting is that there's a bell foundry that's actually still there in Italy. It's called the Pontifical Bell Foundry. Oh. And it was founded 1,000 years ago, and it's still owned and operated by the same family, the Marinellis, and that's just incredible.
That's quite a legacy.
There's other. They say that there are other foundries that actually make bells that are just as old, but this is the only one that we're aware of that actually the same family operates it and owns it.
That's really wild.
Amazing that any family can trace their lineage back 1,000 years. Was that alone is interesting.
Does it say where in Italy that is? I'm sorry, I missed that part.
It does. I didn't write that down because, quite frankly, I didn't know exactly how to pronounce it.
Oh, okay. No, I'm just always curious. We're planning a trip to Italy in the next like year and a half or 2 years.
Agone or Agnone? I don't know the pronunciation.
Agnone. I don't know.
1040. Is when is when that was founded. So that's pretty incredible.
Wow, that's a really cool bit of information.
And then how important the bell became in society of the time was that it's now put forth as an idea that settlements were actually built around what they called bell distance, so that a village could be alerted of like an incoming invasion or a fire or some type of disaster that needed everyone to be alerted to.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bell towers were very important to civilization. And they as cities were built and everything, the bell towers became higher and larger. And so it functioned as all a way to alert people and call people to order and to come worship. And they could even supposedly foretell the weather by listening to the sound of the bell, the way the sound traveled through the layers of air. I don't know how accurate that is, but it is, the claim is made that people would actually use it as some type of weather forecast.
Wow. You know, I'm looking it up as you're talking about it, and there's a Marinelli Bell Museum, which looks fascinating. Wow, these bells look really great. They're huge.
There's an article on it that shows their workshop and everything, and I'm wondering, some of those, the walls are just covered up to the ceiling with all these tools and little... You know that, you know, all these hundreds and hundreds of times that they've had to make a bell, and they have all these different sizes of these tools. And I'm wondering how, you know, some of these tools probably are hundreds of years old that are on their walls.
Sure. Or nearly 1,000. Yeah. And look, Tinker was trying to put them out of business, not, you know, 150 years ago.
Molten bronze, 1,200 degrees Celsius. That's 2,200 degrees Fahrenheit. So
I believe you could do it, but I don't know. Not with that equipment. I don't know.
I tell you.
All right. Well, Christopher Cooling from Forgotten.tv. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Do you want to talk about Forgotten TV? What you're up to? What you're doing in the future?
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
You've been doing a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah, my last episode was on time travel in the 1970s.
God, I love that.
So how time travel was depicted on television, actually from the first depiction of it in popular media, radio, and then how that came down to TV, but particularly in the 1970s, how we got two TV movies and a TV series that depicted time travel.
Early does that go, if you don't mind me asking? Do you, like, is there a radio show that you could recommend that touches upon time travel?
Well, the first one that I'm aware of is in 1948, CBS Radio had a program called Escape, and they had an adaptation of H.G. Wells' The Time Machine.
Oh, okay.
Great. And you can still listen to it. It's easily findable.
I love old time radio.
It's fantastic. I think there's even a couple of versions. They did it twice. But we still have a lot of those recordings because radio stations tended to record a lot of their programming. And it was it's very interesting. It's kind of short, too, which is, you know, why it's an adaptation. They kind of shortened it up. But even the earliest TV I found was 1951 in a show called Captain Zero. Was a local TV show on in California, Los Angeles and San Francisco. And because it was kinescoped, we still have some of the recordings today for that. And that was actually an early syndicated show in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And so Captain Zero was the adult man, Captain Zero, and his teenage sidekick, Jet. And he would send the boy back into time to fix something that they would see as wrong. So you see elements of Voyagers and, you know, Quantum Leap and other shows very, very early in television. So that was my last episode. My next episode, I'm doing a show on. Oh my goodness, I am drawing a.
It's all right.
Nearly a complete blank.
Well, you know what? I did want to ask you anyway about if you'd looked at any of the early Doctor Who episodes.
I mentioned it because Doctor Who obviously is was a depiction of time travel on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Only in passing, because I kind of lay the foundation and then I get to the forgotten TV era of the 70s and 80s. And that's what I focus on. So
color.
Yes. well, some things were. But virtually everything was in color by 1970, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Right? I mean, unless it was intentional, like the Addams Family or something.
Yeah, it was still, late 60s, we were still advertising certain shows to be in color. And that was one of the selling points of Star Trek was to sell color televisions. That's when they had all the multicolored little buttons and bright colored uniforms and everything.
Yeah. Remember in the 90s, it was like in stereo.
That's right. That's right.
In HD, so we're always pushing, but nothing anymore. Now what do we have in 4K? Who cares?
They're always trying to sell us some new thing.
But it's, I don't know. We've yet to really go from the VHS to the DVD again. That leap.
I don't think you're going to see that again.
No.
I mean, we had the jump from DVD to Blu-ray.
Which is a big jump, but it's just not as monumental.
It's not, because it's less evident. You have to have everything correctly hooked up. You have to have a large enough set to see the difference and so forth. So it's not the, wow, immediately understood benefit.
Yeah.
So, that's where we're at. So next Forgotten TV is on short-lived show called Probe from 1988.
Oh, okay. Probe. I had never heard of it.
With Parker Stevenson.
Hmm. All right. I'm check it out, man. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, of course, to everyone else. Thank you very much for listening to Walnut Grove Cast. Please subscribe in iTunes and leave a review. And that's about it. Again, Chris, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
And I was beyond.
And I hope that you find some more time over the summer and rock it out. I think both of our spaces get warm after about 45 minutes. So
yes.
So I'm going to cut it now. But again, thank you very much. Again.